Penguin Random House Audio presents Eyes on the Street, The Life of Jane Jacobs by Robert Cannigal. Read for you by Kimberly Farr. Introduction. Think about what you'd want to say about Jane Jacobs, and it's hard not to wonder what she'd say right back. You might not want to get in a debate with Jane. She was sure to beat you. In verbal combat, she was overwhelming. When she was in her 30s, before she'd written The Death and Life of Great American Cities, she wrote a provocative article for a major magazine whose publisher questioned her reporting. When the two of them met, Jane defended her account with, by one account, a screed of facts and first-hand observations. Later, she asked a sympathetic colleague why he'd not stuck up for her more. "No need," said he. "The poor man," the publisher, "thought he'd hit a buzzsaw." You could say Jane Jacobs didn't suffer fools gladly, which is true. But you don't want to say it because it's such a damnable cliché, and you don't want to utter a cliché in front of Jane. You want to be at your best. If there's a flabbiness to your argument, a want of pointed example, a blurriness of vision, you probably wouldn't want it to show. Because if it did, around the kitchen table at her home in Greenwich Village, or later in Toronto, or at a public meeting, or among a bunch of academics, she'd just gobble you up. There are ways to disagree with Jane Jacobs, but not as many as you might think, Roger Sale wrote of her in the Hudson Review in 1970, because on her own terms, she is almost invariably right. And the real questions arise when you start to consider what she has left out. Jane, which is what everyone called her, including her three children, wrote 7 books, saved neighborhoods, stopped expressways, was arrested twice, basked in the glow of legions of admirers, and had a million discussions and debates around the kitchen table, which she always won. At least in her later years, though there's reason to think it went all the way back to grade school, she invariably dominated the conversation. She listened, she responded, she challenged. She thought about what she wanted to say and said it. Not honey-coated, not smoothed over. It just came out. Call her brutal. Call her honest. Someone once said of her, "What a dear, sweet grandmother she isn't." Jane was perfectly normal, healthy and happy in all the important ways. She had friends who loved her. She was good to them, kind and loving. She could be playful, even silly. At least once she screwed up her face into ridiculous shapes and submitted herself to the camera. When you greeted her, she'd throw her arms around you in a tight clasp. She took time out from the writing that was about the most important thing in the world to her to help her children, her friends, her neighbors. But always, she said what she thought. She didn't know how not to. Once, the editor of a magazine she worked for spoke to her when she said what she thought to the New York Times. "I believe you really should not have sounded off." Now, it's fair to ask, was she always like this? Or was it a personality trait that blossomed over time? Perhaps only after she became famous with her first book? Or, having moved to Toronto, after she became a revered symbol of that city? Were these the affectations of personality that a prominent person sometimes makes part of him or herself over the years? Or was she always this way? Jane Jacobs wrote 7 books, but is remembered most for one of them, The Death and Life of Great American Cities, published in 1961, continuously in print ever since, and heralded as the book that, more than any other single influence, has reshaped how people see cities and what they expect of them. When they talked about it later, readers sometimes made it sound as if death and life was near to a religious experience for them. That before reading it, they were as they were. Then, after they read it, they were different. That henceforth, they saw differently. That their Chicago or New York or Boston had been reshaped before their eyes, with a new balance as to what was important and what was not. For many today, certainly, Jane Jacobs verges on a cult figure, with death and life a kind of gospel, like Chairman Mao's Little Red Book in its time, or the Bible, or the U.S. Constitution, a repository of revealed truth. I was among those early drawn to Jacobs through Death and Life, which I read in the early 1970s. Its unapologetic assertion of all a city could be at its best, its affirmation of urban sensibilities like those I'd absorbed growing up in New York and later seen in Paris and San Francisco, was a revelation. But these many years later, the subject of the book you are now listening to is not cities, urban planning, or urban design. It's not a book that sets out to gather upbeat stories of rejuvenation and revitalization from the urban front lines. It does not take the listener by the hand and guide her through resurgent Station North in Baltimore or gentrified Williamsburg in Brooklyn, through old warehouses and office buildings made into homes, or downtowns set a-bustling again, or exult in the reassuring drops in crime in New York and other cities, or enjoy the vision of city-busting urban highways torn down in Boston and San Francisco. Each of these, seen through the right lens, can be laid at Jane Jacobs's door. And you'll find such happy stories in this book. But they are not its subject. Rather, this is a biography of the remarkable woman who helped make such accounts possible. This book looks back to a time when the rare, upbeat report of city life was buried beneath stacks of press releases from new suburban developments, new interstate highways linked by cloverleafs, new rounds of corporate exodus to suburban office parks. To a time when old city neighborhoods were being erased, high-rise housing projects erected in their place, when slums were slums and everyone knew exactly what they were, or thought they did, when anyone who wanted to live in the city would have been seen as just a little weird. To a time into which Jane Jacobs strode, looked around her, and helped the rest of us see through new eyes. During the last half of her life, and since her death at the age of 89 in 2006, she has inspired a devotion whose intensity one is tempted to greet with a lifted eyebrow. She's been called the most influential urban thinker of all time, ahead of Frederick Law Olmsted, Lewis Mumford, Robert Moses, and Thomas Jefferson. She's been called genius of common sense, godmother of urban America, an urban Thoreau, and the Rachel Carson of the economic world. One of her books, Systems of Survival, was deemed as bitchily observant as a Woody Allen film. In turn, one Woody Allen film was described as channeling Jane Jacobs and her complaints about the alienating scale of modern architecture and post-war urbanism. The death and life of great American cities was likened to the paper Luther nailed to the Schlosskirche Wittenberg 4 centuries earlier. A man who described himself as a Jacobs groupie traveled to her residences in New York and Toronto, saying that for him, a city geek, this was like a trip to Graceland and Tupelo, Mississippi. In an essay, The Society of St. Jane, Mariana Mogilevich wrote how, after Jane's death, not surprisingly, no time at all was wasted in beginning the canonization process. When the occupiers occupied Wall
Sample complete. Ready to continue?